Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Christopher Jones Cruz, Bruce Alpert, and Brian Lynn. Later, John Russell will bring us this week's lesson in everyday grammar. But first, here is Christopher Jones Cruz.
Vietnamese Americans are the sixth largest immigrant group in the United States. Many of them take part in political activities and events. In recent years, there has been a split between older and younger Vietnamese Americans. Old or young, many Vietnamese Americans say it is difficult to choose which presidential candidate to support. VOA recently spoke with some of these voters in Orange County, California. The area is home to one of the largest Vietnamese communities in the country. Little Saigon is a part of the county where many Vietnamese Americans live and work. Many people there are talking about the presidential election. Some of them say they will not be voting for the candidate they like. Instead, they say they will be voting for the candidate they dislike the least. Leslie Lay says he is voting for the Republican candidate.
Between the two devils, I choose the lesser one. That's Donald Trump.
Lay was a colonel in the Army of South Vietnam before fleeing to the United States. Like many of those who came to the U.S. after the end of the Vietnam War, he has voted for Republicans in every election since he gained U.S. citizenship. But this year, it took him a long time to decide.
It is very difficult this time. Because the two bad candidates.
He says Trump never thinks before speaking about what he's thinking, and he has changed policies a lot. He plans to build a wall between the United States and Mexico, and he says he will force the Mexican government to pay for it. It's not reality, so what he said is just his imagination. Lay does not like Trump, but he says the Democratic Party candidate is more dangerous.
Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State, she must be capable to tell what information is classified and relate to national security and which information is okay to transmit over her private server email. If she's not capable to do that, she cannot be a president.
Mike Nguyen says he believes in the Republican Party's economic policies. He says he votes Republican because of the party's policies, not because of Donald Trump. He says he wants to give money back to the people who create jobs. Dung Do is the managing editor of the Vietnamese language newspaper Ngoi Viet. He says he understands why older Vietnamese Americans have supported Republicans.
During the Vietnam War, the Republican was very aggressive, where the Democrat was anti-war. So that kind of thinking, so they think the Democrat kind of responsible for their loss in Vietnam.
Do says some older Vietnamese do not believe a woman should lead a country.
How about girl leader? No! No way!
But Do says Republican Vietnamese Americans are reluctant to say they support Trump. He says some older Vietnamese Americans are changing their support to the Democratic Party. People live here longer, especially old people, he says. They get benefits from social programs. When they first came here, they thought that they might do something to change Vietnam. But now, they see the relationship between Vietnam and the U.S. is getting warmer and warmer. Younger Vietnamese Americans hold different views than their parents and grandparents. Many of them support Clinton, including Viet Trong.
Anyone who has served in politics for 20, 30 years would have some skeleton in the closet. I mean, all the things that's been mentioned about her, nothing is really that outrageous, nothing that hasn't been done before by all the politicians. I mean, I think people are just more harsh on her because she's a female.
Hetty La is also voting for the Democratic Party candidate.
I would say Clinton is the better candidate for president.
Hugh Cha supported Bernie Sanders, an independent senator who competed in the Democratic Party's primary elections, until Sanders ended his candidacy.
I will be supporting Hillary. She has adopted a lot of Bernie Sanders' policies and implemented a lot of progressive platforms into her personal platform.
Leslie Lay says if you don't vote for anybody, you indirectly vote for the bad one. But Dzung Do believes that some Vietnamese Americans will not mark their presidential ballot this year. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
Percent of young Americans are fearful about the future of their country. Nearly 9 in 10 young African Americans polled by Harvard said people of their racial background are under attack. Nearly 7 in 10 young Hispanics feel the same way, as do 45% of young whites. These opinions are from a poll released this week by Harvard University's Institute of Politics. One young voter told Harvard, "Everything seems out of control, and our politicians care more about themselves than doing the right thing for all Americans. We're all extremely divided, and very few seem to have any interest in trying to unite us." Some young adults questioned by Harvard appear to share an important opinion with Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump, that the system is rigged against average Americans. But the Harvard poll found most young Americans aged 18 to 29 are not supporting Trump for president. Nearly half of likely young voters, or 49%, said they will vote for Hillary Clinton, the Democratic candidate for president. The Harvard poll found 21% of likely voters support Trump, the Republican candidate for president. While over half of young Americans are fearful about America's future, many are hopeful about their own financial futures. The young voters were asked by Harvard how they will be doing when they are their parents' age. 41% said they expect to be better off financially. Only 14% said they would be worse off. Harvard said 40% of young voters have a positive opinion of Clinton and 53% a negative opinion. For Trump, 19% said they have a positive opinion, while 73% have a negative opinion. Two young voters, one supporting Trump and the other Clinton, spoke to VOA about the election. Nathaniel White, a recent graduate of the University of North Alabama, is leading Alabama College Republicans for Trump. White said that support for Trump does not mean young Republicans are happy with recorded comments by Trump in 2005 about women. In the recently released recording, Trump talks in an offensive way about women. But White said America is electing a president to move America ahead economically and keep it safe, not someone to be a role model. "We are looking at someone to lead us into a better position," White said. "We are looking at 2,000 federal appointments, including the Supreme Court, by the next president. That has to be our biggest concern." Conrad Zbikowski is a senior at the University of Minnesota, Twin Cities. He is leading college Democratic efforts in Minnesota to elect Hillary Clinton. Zbikowski said most young people who supported Bernie Sanders for the Democratic presidential nomination are now for Clinton. "Many Republicans at his college are undecided or are voting for Clinton," he said. "I think millennials have a lot of stresses trying to find a good-paying job because we owe so much in student loans," Zbikowski said. "We are looking for someone who can make college more affordable and reduce the interest on student loans and move the country forward. That person is clearly Hillary Clinton." Harvard Institute of Politics polling director John Della Volpe said 49% of 18 to 29-year-olds said they will definitely be voting. That is about the same percentage that told Harvard they would definitely vote in 2012 when Barack Obama won a second term. "Young voters are fearful about the future of America, and that is moving them to action," Della Volpe said. Here is what one young voter told Harvard. "People are not kind anymore and would rather hurt than help. People are selfish and are only looking out for themselves. The leaders running for election are showing the rest of us what the future will look like. I do not want them as role models for the future of America." I'm Bruce Alpert.
Teachers have always had to deal with cheating students. But in today's high-tech world, new devices are making it much easier for students to cheat. Recent studies have shown that most teenagers in the United States now have access to smartphones. Experts say much of the cheating is done with the help of smartphones. Niall Nickel is a technology and social media expert. He says many students put information into their mobile phones to cheat on tests. They can then hide their cheating by using other devices to view the information.
We also have things like Google Glass as well as smart contact lenses that have the ability to capture video and transmit it to a remote site.
Earlier this year, officials caught several Thai students cheating this way during exams to get into a top medical school. What they were doing was looking at the test with their glasses on, Nickel said. It was capturing the exam questions, transmitting them to some associates outside the classroom. He added that some students even have smart watches that only show information if they are viewed with special glasses. Some phones also have a very low ring sound that can only be heard by younger people, according to Nickel. Denise Pope is a learning expert at Stanford University in California. She said some of the students are not the ones you think would cheat.
These are kids who are doing well in school, and they are still cheating because they need to keep up their grades. They feel the pressure to maintain a really high grade point average.
Pope also co-created the organization Challenge Success. It provides schools and families with tools to help children become more involved and have a more balanced educational experience. She says improving the learning and testing process can help cut down on cheating.
Instead of trying to chase this problem, to get out in front of it. And what I mean by that is to create assignments where it's almost impossible to cheat.
As an example, she said teachers can ask students to turn in progress of their work and projects before it is complete. Teachers can be sure the material is the student's work and can provide suggestions. Pope added that changing the way tests are structured can prevent cheating. She says the best tests require students to write their answers instead of choosing from a list of choices. Many schools already have barred students from taking smartphones into testing rooms. Others are experimenting with looking for radio signals or other methods to discover hidden devices used to cheat. But Pope said one of the most important ways to help stop cheating is to get teachers, students, and parents to talk openly about it. She says this can help students better understand the reasons for holding themselves to a high standard of honesty. I'm Brian Lynn.
Political candidates like to use one or more grammatical structures when they speak. They use grammatical structures because they can have a rhetorical effect. In other words, the order of words and the way they are used can direct attention to important ideas and help make points clearer. This clarity, the candidates hope, will influence likely voters to choose them. So, what grammatical structures can you find in political speeches? What can you learn from such speeches? In our report today, we explore one grammatical structure commonly used in the American election campaign. This structure is called the deliberate fragment.
In English, a complete sentence has a subject and a predicate. A predicate is something that expresses what is being said about the subject. Consider the sentence, "I am going to the store." The subject is I, and the predicate is am going to the store. We say the words am going to the store are an incomplete sentence or fragment. When English speakers use a deliberate fragment, they often present a noun or verb phrase as a sentence. The result is that the sentence does not have a subject and predicate. So, a sentence fragment might be going to the store. In this example, the fragment does not have a subject.
The Everyday Grammar team avoids sentences like that. We know many of our readers are English language teachers, and we want to give learners a good model of English. However, when used in a careful and intelligent way, sentence fragments can have great effect. Poets, songwriters, politicians, and speechwriters have known this for a long time. What do these sentence fragments look like? Let's find some in recent speeches. Presidential candidates Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton used them when they officially accepted their party's nominations 3 months ago. In their acceptance speeches, both Trump and Clinton used complete sentences before presenting sentence fragments. They use these fragments to highlight or publicize ideas. Consider these examples.
Once again, France is the victim of brutal Islamic terrorism. Men, women, and children viciously mowed down, lives ruined, families ripped apart, a nation in mourning.
Our military is a national treasure. We entrust our commander-in-chief to make the hardest decisions our nation faces. Decisions about war and peace, life and death.
You may note that both Trump and Clinton begin their statements by using complete sentences. Trump says, "Once again, France is the victim of brutal Islamic terrorism." Clinton says, "We entrust our commander-in-chief to make the hardest decisions our nation faces." Both of these statements are complete sentences. They have subjects and predicates. They are not missing any important words. However, after using complete sentences, both candidates presented sentence fragments. They use these fragments for rhetorical effect.
Let's listen again to Trump's statement.
Once again, France is the victim of brutal Islamic terrorism. Men, women, and children viciously mowed down, lives ruined, families ripped apart, a nation in mourning.
At the end of the comment, Trump uses a clear sentence fragment, a nation in mourning. This sentence has no verb. It is only a noun phrase. This unusual structure directs the listener's attention to it. The fragment, a nation in mourning, notes the results of the terrorist attack. It describes the effect of the violence and notes the important point Trump wants to make. In his opinion, the world is not a safe place because there have been recent terrorist attacks. What about the other sentences?
Men, women, and children viciously mowed down, lives ruined, families ripped apart.
Trump is using a form of parallelism and the passive voice. Parallel parallelism is when something is very similar to something else. In passive voice sentences, the verb acts on the subject, not the other way around. The passive voice does not give information about the person responsible for the violence. Instead, it only gives information about the effects of the violence. You can read about this subject in an earlier Everyday Grammar program. The effect of this grammatical structure, using short, passive sentences and sentence fragments, is to create a strong mental image of the effects of the attack. This grammatical choice, to highlight the effects of the violence, makes sense. Trump wants to persuade voters that Hillary Clinton will not be able to stop violence around the world.
Now, let's listen again to Clinton's statement.
Our military is a national treasure. We entrust our commander-in-chief to make the hardest decisions our nation faces. Decisions about war and peace, life and death.
Clinton also uses sentence fragments after presenting a complete sentence. She follows her first two statements with a fragment, decisions about war and peace. This, too, does not have a verb. Clinton could have said, the commander-in-chief makes decisions about war and peace. Or she could have said, the commander-in-chief decides when we go to war and when we remain peaceful. Both of these possible sentences, even if they carry the same meaning, are longer and less direct. By using two fragments, decisions about war and peace, life and death, Clinton is able to direct our attention to the importance of the decisions that the president makes. She is telling voters that she understands the importance of these decisions. She is also able to keep moving through her sentences without losing her listeners. She knows that if she keeps using the same sentence structure in every sentence, the listeners may soon lose interest in her ideas.
Politics is not the only place you will hear or see sentence fragments. They also appear in songs, poetry, books, newspapers, and daily conversations. Native speakers use sentence fragments because they can be a useful tool when you want to add something special to a long series of sentences. However, in general, fragments are best used only once in a while, and only if you understand what you are doing with them. Instead, you should be working on developing strong, coherent sentences that have a complete subject and predicate. Remember, sentence fragments are like spices. You would probably never eat a meal that only has spices, like black pepper or paprika. In the same way, you should not write a story in English that only uses sentence fragments. Such an essay would quickly become unreadable, in the same way that a meal made of pepper would probably be hard to eat. I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm John Russell.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.